Hello, Doug Brown here, joining Brendan Stone today on Unusual Sources on CFMU 93.3 FM, McMaster Radio in Hamilton. Well, we've done a lot of interviews over the past year about people experiencing tough times, migrant workers, people not making a living wage, and a lot of this comes under a title or government policies generally referred to as austerity. And, you know, there hasn't been a lot of pushback to the austerity agenda in much of Canada, but there has been in one area, and that's in Quebec, where there's been huge protests, students, workers, everybody starting to protest government policies that are making it tough for people, but probably easier for corporations. So we have today on the line Drew Oyajay. He's a board member with Smart Change, a group in Quebec that is working to expand the anti-austerity activities across Canada. And I've got Drew right on the line right now. Drew, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us today. And Drew,
thanks for having me.
Maybe we can just start with a definition of austerity. I think it means different things to different people. So what's your take and what your organization's take on this?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, austerity is typically sort of thought of as you know, basically what it sounds like. It's, you know, times are tough and things need to get lean, and so we need to increase revenues and decrease costs in order to make up for budget shortfalls that, you know, happened after the sort of economic crisis and things like that. That's the rhetoric around austerity. But the reality, I think, is that those cuts and those cost increases tend to affect, you know, disproportionately middle class, working class people, and the socially marginalized, you know, almost uniquely. And at the same time, you have, you know, a huge benefits accruing to sort of corporate class. So instead of saying that austerity is about belt tightening, we say that austerity is about selective belt tightening. And in fact, austerity is sacrificing, is the process of sacrificing the common good for the for corporate profits. So basically, it's a transfer of wealth from the majority of people to a minority of corporate shareholders.
And, you know, the selective belt tightening that's going on, you know, on the one hand, we have an obsession with the deficit, and we're going to have to cut social programs and can't afford pensions and so on. However, the government keeps introducing measures that benefit well-to-do people. With lower taxes, you know, some of the most publicized ones have been people can have shelter their savings, so they don't pay taxes on the interest. The other recent government initiative was income splitting for high income earners, so that they pay significantly less taxes than they used to. Drew, you know, there's been a lot of protest action in Quebec. It's, in fact, even these big actions aren't getting a lot of media coverage in here in Ontario, for example. I know after one of the largest protests, I first heard about it because I surfed the internet, and it was news from Telesur, the Latin American news source. What are you going to do to try to break down this this barrier and extend the campaign against austerity?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, we have a huge movement here in Quebec. There's a really active student movement for the last few months of the last term. It's definitely a little calmer now, but certainly for a while you had thousands of people hitting the streets on an almost daily basis. And that was so the students were really leading the charge there. And whereas before the students were focused on sort of more narrowly on sort of tuition increases, they've actually really broadened their focus considerably to talk about sort of this kind of societal problem of wealth distribution and who gets the profits and the surpluses from our economic activity. So that's really been the focus, and certainly, as you mentioned, thousands of workers have joined in. There have been some really large national demonstrations held here in Montreal. And so I guess our concern at Smart Change, our concern was that this nobody's really bridging that gap between the sort of, the French language militancy and the rest of Canada, even though we're facing mostly the same problems. If you look at the Harper government's policies, they've been attacking, unions. They've been attacking women's rights and advocacy for pay equity. They've been attacking environmental regulations. They've been attacking migrant workers and making it tougher for migrant workers to stand up for their rights and to have access to basic services. They've been increasing military spending. They've been attacking the rights of Indigenous people and continuing efforts to keep Indigenous people impoverished and miserable in order to facilitate the sort of continued theft of their land. It goes on and on. So what we've tried to do is sort of name all those different things as the process of sacrificing the common good for corporate profit, and say that we actually have a common interest here. All those different groups, if we start talking about austerity as something that is actually affecting all those different groups, that we can actually, that actually implies a really broad alliance that's the vast majority, of people in Canada, and that together we can actually push for policies and social relations that actually reflect the interests of the majority, and not just this tiny minority that now has this sort of massive, massive pool of wealth at everyone else's expense. We actually saw that the top 1% the top 84 Canadians they have the same net worth as the bottom 11 million. So 84 people have the same wealth as 11 million people in Canada. And so that's, I think, indicative of a major imbalance. And as you mentioned, the Harper government has been very much taking an approach of deepening that inequality as fast as possible, as far as I can tell. With the income splitting especially, it has shown to pretty much only benefit, in the vast majority of cases, it massively benefits the extremely wealthy, and might benefit a few people who are, in the sort of upper middle class range, but pretty much no one else does it benefit. At the same time as they're cutting sort of public services, they're cutting jobs in the public service, and attacking Canada Post. So you really have there's a full-scale assault going on all these fronts, but I think there's a tendency for people to be isolated and sort of not see how those issues are affecting all these other people, and that there actually is a possibility of getting together, and as our campaign implies, uniting against austerity.
Right, and I keep thinking of labor's slogan of solidarity forever. We've got to work together on these things. So the campaign it started last winter sometime, didn't it?
No, we just started. I guess in the winter. I guess it was March when we launched the campaign. Mm-hmm. We started working on it, I guess, around January, but we only went public with it in March. The most recent event, we're actually having an event on June 13th in Guelph. There's going to be an all-day training and sort of strategy session that's going to be happening across the street from the food bank in Guelph all day on June 13th, and that's actually going to bring together a bunch of different groups, environmental groups, anti-poverty, labor, indigenous, and migrant workers, and so on, are all going to be represented, and it'll be sort of an opportunity to talk about these issues.
Oh, great. And Guelph's very nearby. If people were interested, where could they get more information?
Probably the easiest place to go is the Smart Change Facebook group. Just look up smartchange.ca on Facebook, or go to the United Against Austerity website, and it's there as well.
Okay.
So the United Against Austerity website is uniteagainstausterity.ca, and that has a lot of really really good in-depth information about how austerity affects the environment, migrant workers, peace movements, women, union members, and indigenous communities.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned one of our most vulnerable groups is migrant workers, and of course, just a couple of months ago, this horrible policy of four in, four out, is mm-hmm. affecting thousands and thousands of poor migrant workers have to leave Canada and have to stay out of Canada for 4 years. And, their life is so tough already. I just can't imagine the effect this is going to have. But, for groups working, for fair treatment of migrant workers, what's the connection to your campaign?
Basically we see it as part of austerity because, the migrant worker system, or the way that migrant workers are treated, is a way of exploiting people pretty systematically. So on the one hand, their wages tend to be far less, and their benefits tend to be far less than Canadian workers. And that's not necessarily because they're willing to work for less. It's because they're more precarious. They have fewer rights that they can effectively stand up for. And that's by design. The government sets things up to be that way. So they, whether it's the Canadian Border Services Agency sort of screening and constantly threatening people with deportation, or whether it's a sort of a temporary foreign worker program that basically puts people at the whim of their employer. In general, it's a way of lowering working conditions and exploiting people, for the benefit of this minority. So again, it's a transfer of wealth from the poorest and most marginalized people, who are creating all kinds of wealth for corporations and so on, and that's being transferred right up to the top. Of the food chain to these, to the 1% and to these 84 Canadians who own the same amount as the bottom third of the whole population.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal statistic. 84 Canadians make as much as the 11 million?
Not make as much, but have as much, net worth.
Yeah,
from Canadian Business Magazine.
Wow. So, imagine if the Canadian government would tax these 84 super rich Canadians, the revenue that would generate.
It would be quite a bit, yeah. I think the fundamental problem is that when people become, or when a class of people, or when a class of corporations becomes more wealthy, that actually gives them more political power. And so when we talk about austerity, or when we talk about belt tightening, it doesn't even have to be the intention of politicians to sort of steal from the poor to give to the rich. Although it certainly is the sort of official policy of many politicians to do that. But it's just much easier to do, right? It's much easier to say, okay, we're going to cut this social program, we're going to privatize this thing. And there's a lot more support for that among the extremely powerful people who are backing them. On the other hand, if you want to say, you know, even if there's a company that's making billions and billions of dollars in profit and is not providing very much that's socially useful, so that's pretty much the definition of a bank these days. It's pretty much every year that Royal Bank, for example, you know, announces that it has record profits. And this is in the middle of, you know, supposedly an economic recession. There's just record profits all the time. But because they have so much power, because that money that they're making gives them so much power, it's a lot more difficult for politicians to say, okay, we're going to tax those people. And so I guess what we're saying is that it really needs to come from a social movement. It needs to come from the bottom up. The people who are getting the worst deal in this whole scenario need to get together and say, you know, enough's enough. The people we need to go get money where there is some, and not by sacrificing the common good, not by sacrificing our environment, not by sacrificing the well-being of migrant workers, not by sacrificing indigenous communities, and so on, not by sacrificing, union rights or workers' rights or incomes or any of that stuff. We need to go get the money, where it is. And that's those 84 people, that's the banks, that's the most profitable companies in Canada that, continually getting these, new levels of corporate tax breaks, really since the late 80s. It's just the corporate tax rate has been steadily decreasing, and the tax burden on individuals has been steadily increasing.
Yeah, what is it about Quebec, the level of awareness of this whole issue of austerity and what is going on with the growing gap between the very rich and the very very poor, and it's led to such a mobilization, and yet in the rest of Canada we haven't had anything like what's happened in Quebec. What do you think the big differences are?
Yeah, it's a tough one. What we can say for sure is that Quebec has, just a much, much more developed sort of political culture when it comes to, popular mobilizations and the sort of populist policies. I think Quebec has often been leading the way in Canada, certainly for a number of years when it comes to, social democracy or labor rights and all this stuff. From there it gets difficult to sort of pinpoint why that is. Some people point to the history of Quebec, for a long time, all the landlords and the bosses and everything were English speaking, whereas the workers, and the farmers and so on were French speaking. And so you end up with a culture that's sort of more fundamentally working class and has a sort of an oppositional consciousness baked in. Whereas in English Canada, there's a much more sort of authoritarian mentality, that tends to defer to authority and tends to, there's still this sort of strong, loyalist sort of tradition, which is obviously mixed in with a lot of other stuff. It's mixed in with really strong labor movements that have popped up and of course there are indigenous people who have been resisting colonialism for 400 years. But on the whole, it tends to be a little more conservative. So I think there's that to contend with, that sort of differences in history. I think one of the challenges that we come up against is that people, people tend to kind of go with the flow, and tend to believe what they're told, by the media and by their sort of leaders. And there's been a major shift to the right, and really the space for people to have different ideas about how things work has been massively diminished, certainly in English Canada, and to some extent in Quebec as well, but I think it remains much more vital, the ability to get ideas out. And to actually mobilize people on in a way that goes totally against what the ruling class is saying is much stronger in Quebec. So we're hoping we're hoping that something like an anti-austerity movement could start to build that kind of consciousness in the rest of Canada as well.
And, you know, I'm always looking for optimistic signs. Perhaps one of the more conservative areas of Canada, you know, has always been regarded as Alberta. And yet there was a stunning election result just a few weeks ago, which I kind of interpreted as, you know, people are really thinking more about options politically than was the case just a few years ago.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so I thought, well, I think the door is open for social initiatives, a nationwide anti-austerity campaign and coalition building, you know, you just look at the numbers, 84 people with the wealth of the bottom 11 million. I mean, if those 11 million plus, you know, probably the other 30 million would get together and push better government policies, which means better government, better election result than we've been used to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key in Alberta, I mean, is that we, you know, I don't think nobody needs to undersell the sort of amount of change that happened in Alberta. I mean, literally, I grew up hearing about stories about, you know, I have cousins who live in Alberta and my uncle and aunt, and hearing stories about Ralph Klein, you know, getting drunk and throwing $5 bills at homeless people at a homeless shelter. And then being, you know, if anything, being celebrated for that in Alberta's political culture. I mean, these are the kinds of stories that sort of forms a whole generation of political expectations in Alberta. And yet, you know, they've turned around and they've elected the NDP, on a as progressive a platform as one can expect really from any party in Canada at this point. You know, certainly, the NDP in BC and Nova Scotia were in many ways less bold than the NDP in Alberta. So I think it really shows that major changes are possible. It also shows the demographic changes that have had an effect there as well.
Right. And
but I think the takeaway from this for me is that we can't put a ceiling on our expectations. You know, if you had told me 2 weeks before the election, you know, the NDP is going to win in Alberta, I would have told you you're crazy, you know. Maybe a minority tops, but, you know, come on. That's ridiculous. And yet it happened, right? They won a crushing majority. And so I think what we need to do is remove the ceiling, you know, stop sort of capping our expectations of what's possible, and start operating on multiple levels. I don't think we need to put out any unrealistic expectations, but I think we need to stop expecting that people are gonna you know, get a little bit of change and then not want any more. I think we need to really set our sights high and say, you know, let's start talking about what we really want and what's really needed. You know, both to address the sort of environmental issues that we're having and the sort of rampant inequality that's happening as well.
Okay, well, I think I applaud what you're doing, and I encourage people to get involved in whatever way they can, whether they're, you know, involved from a labor union or from a peace group or environmental organization. You know, we've got to start working together, and this is a great initiative. And again, if you want further information, your Facebook site was smartchange.ca?
That's correct, and the website is uniteagainstausterity.ca. And once again, we're having a gathering all day in Guelph on June 13th, so people are welcome to come out. But I think that's the best way to participate at this point is to...
Right. So people in the Hamilton and up to Guelph area and Kitchener, Waterloo, I encourage you to go to the website, get the specifics. Meeting's coming up very shortly, just 10 days away, June 13th in Guelph. So here's a local action, and so let's get engaged. Drew, thank you so much for joining us today, and maybe as the campaign progresses, maybe we can talk again.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And that was Drew Oyejay, and he's a board member of Smart Change, a group that's campaigning to extend the anti-austerity fight across Canada.